We're joined today by Dr. Harry Hagopian, and again, of course, with the Holy Father in the Holy Land, we're going to be discussing his pilgrimage. In particular today, we're going to be looking back at his time in Jordan, having now moved on to Israel. Harry, good to see you today.
Likewise. It's nice being here.
Now, I don't know what you think about this, but you look at TV coverage, and with the Pope having landed in Israel, it's almost as if pilgrimage starts here. But that does something of a disservice to the great many events that he's actually had in Jordan, doesn't it?
It does do a huge disservice. I'm not surprised that the majority, the bulk of the press corps are in Israel and Palestine, because that is what sells newspapers and that is where the sensational part of the visit is. People would be scrutinizing every word, every step, every movement, every handshake, and attributing some political interpretation to those movements in Israel-Palestine, whereby that doesn't happen in Jordan. And so in a sense, Jordan could be viewed almost as a dress rehearsal for the real thing that's happening in Israel-Palestine. In that sense, I tend to agree with your comment, but I would think it is a huge disservice because, first of all, Jordan in its own right has a lot to offer. Jordan also has an indigenous local Christian community. Jordan has a very thriving Christian Catholic community there of the various denominations. And I think that by starting the pilgrimage in Jordan, just like his predecessor, Pope John Paul II did, that he actually sets the scene for a more holistic approach to how we look at the Middle East and how we build up all the various stations that would lead us from Jordan into Israel, into the Palestinian territories.
So pivotal then, and I think as such it would be good if we could now summarise and look over the places that Pope Benedict actually went to in Jordan. What would you pick out?
There are a few that I would pick out. Obviously, there are people who looked at the huge mass that took place at the International Stadium in the capital, Amman. People would look at the meetings that the Pope had with their royal majesties, particularly King Abdullah II, the King of Jordan. Those are all almost expected stops alongside the pilgrimage. However, the ones that actually drew my attention are a few that went outside the normal script of a program. For instance, one of the first things that the Holy Father did when he arrived into Jordan is to go and visit the church-run Regina Pacis, which is basically a center for the disabled. And I know that you've got some photos of that on the website. And I think it was very moving visit, not least because here he is coming to a region that is traumatized by emotional and physical pain from all the conflicts, the wars, the misunderstandings between communities, between countries. And in a sense, he's saying that faith is a healer. Our faith can heal those wounds, whether they are physical, emotional, spiritual, or mental. And therefore, I was very moved by that visit to this center for the disabled. I was also very encouraged by the fact that he also, along the 3 days that he was in Jordan before he flew into Israel, that he also laid the foundation stones for the Latin Rite Catholic and Greek Catholic churches in Bethany beyond the Jordan. And your readers and listeners would know that that is where the baptismal site is, where Jesus was baptized. He also laid the cornerstone for a Catholic university in Madaba, which is about 20 miles outside Amman. Now, why am I picking on those? I'm not picking on those because they're institutional stops. I'm picking on those because they are affirming the Christian presence and therefore, importantly, the Christian witness in a country that is in its majority Muslim. And yet here are the Christian communities, local indigenous churches and communities who are opening up centers for the disabled, who are opening up new universities, new churches. First of all, it shows the openness that Jordan shows toward and the tolerance that it has toward all faith communities. And secondly, it also highlights the active way in which Christians pursue their witness in Jordan. So I was very much encouraged by this. And finally, I would pick out one final station, which I thought was very, very important. And that's when the Pope visited the Al-Hussein bin Talal Mosque. Now, Al-Hussein bin Talal Mosque is a gleaming, fantastic, beautiful new mosque that was built, and it's in the name of the late King Hussein of Jordan, who is the father of the incumbent King of Jordan, King Abdullah. And the reason why it's very important is because for me, this visit, which he did accompanied by Prince Ghazi, who's of the royal family, the Hashemite royal family, and very much involved with interreligious issues, basically met with the Muslim religious leaders, met with the diplomatic corps, and in a sense is already paving the way for that kind of interreligious dialogue that needs to take place in a region that's a mosaic of three faith communities, Jews, Christians, and Muslims.
Well, let's go a little bit further with that. I know, obviously, you lived for many years in Jerusalem, but also you have extensive experience of having worked closely with the Royal Institute of Interfaith Studies in Amman. Mm-hmm. Now, you've talked about how Jordan is very much a template, a place of tolerance where the three major faiths that you've mentioned there can actually make some headway. Are we making headway right now?
Yes, I think we are making headway, and we certainly are making headway. And this is why it's very important to support Jordan's openness and Jordan's sense of interreligious ecumenism, if I'm going to put those two words together, because the Royal Institute for Interfaith Studies, the RIS, with which I have had many, many dealings over the past, I remember going and meeting many colleagues there as I crisscrossed between Jerusalem and Amman for many years. They and many others like them, Prince Ghazi himself is very, very well established now in terms of interreligious dialogue. For instance, some of your readers and listeners might know that he was also one of the key figures behind what is known as the Common Word, and what was behind the letter sent by some Muslim scholars to Christian leaders talking about dialogue. And what do we understand by our faith? Who is Abraham? Who is this common forefather we have? How do we deal with our faith in a community that basically has Christians and Muslims together? So all these, in my opinion, channel toward a certain sense of living together, conviviality. Now, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. I would be the first person to say that I cannot paint a very rosy picture of the region. Anybody who listens to the news would know that there is a certain sense of radicalization, that there are always strident voices, be they Jewish, be they Muslim, be they Christian, and that therefore, in the midst of this stridency, in the midst of all those radical voices that are basically questioning this whole concept of coexistence, having the Holy Father, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, one of the most important Christian leader in the world, going to the Holy Land, lending his weight, not only behind the Christians of the region, because we all know they need it, and if we don't know they need it, we should know they need it, but also lending his weight to the kind of Christian Muslim and Christian Jewish dialogue that is going on, I think that's essential. And one thing, James, that always fascinates me is when people talk about interreligious dialogue, then they dismiss it or poo-poo it by sort of saying, well, there are so many differences, they don't understand each other, they can't see eye to eye on so many issues, be they Muslims and Christians or Jews and Christians or Jews and Muslims. So what's the point of dialogue? Well, that is the very essence, the very definition of why dialogue should happen. If you and I agree on everything, then why should we sit and dialogue? The fact that we don't agree on everything, in fact, we disagree on a lot of things, be they conceptual and abstract or more practical and existential almost, that means that we need to redouble our efforts, because if we don't redouble our efforts of finding that common word, to use that heading, then I think the region and the world as a whole are going toward the kind of clashes, not necessarily Huntington's clash of civilizations, but a clash of religions or a clash of perceptions. And what we need to do is to deal with those perceptions. And people in Jordan, be it Prince Ghazi, be it the Royal Institute for Interfaith Studies, be it Prince Hassan bin Talal, the brother of the late King Hussein, who's also done a lot of work in terms of interreligious dialogue, these are people who are laboring away to try and find that common bond, which is at the very basis of our common humanity.
I want to stick with that thought, actually, and the reason we shouldn't write off that leg of his pilgrimage. Now, we have Christians from Iraq and other places in the Middle East that obviously have had to move into Jordan and Syria and surrounding areas. So it's very fitting that we should talk into religious dialogue in Jordan, isn't it?
It is fitting that we should talk into religious dialogue in Jordan. There are lots and lots of Iraqis. I mean, the bulk of Iraqi refugees who left Iraq, and of them, a majority of the Christians also left and went either to Syria or to Jordan. And actually yesterday when I was watching some of the news clippings and the pictures on the different channels, I could see people at the International Stadium where the Pope held his mass waving Iraqi flags, also waving Syrian flags, waving Lebanese flags. I mean, Lebanon to me is an example par excellence of confessionalism that needs to be dealt with gently, delicately and sensitively, and this is why, for instance, Cardinal Sfer, who is the head of the Maronite Church in Lebanon, is also in Jordan, or was in Jordan, in order to welcome the Pope when he arrived there. All this sensitivity, all this mosaic of communities that are in the region, they should find a source of support and a voice. And I think the Pope lends his voice. Now, I do not think that the Pope can act on their behalf, and I don't actually think that they would want him to do so. But I think when he comes there, he's bringing the collective Christian, or at least Catholic, awareness of their existence, of their witness, of their lives in the Middle East, and saying, we're praying for you, we're praying for peace in the whole region, because that peace would be beneficial for you, Christians, just as it would be beneficial for Muslims and Jews alike.
Dr. Harry Hagopian, thank you ever so much for your insight, as always, and hopefully you'll be back with us to do a wrap, a look back on the Israel and Palestinian territory legs of the pilgrimage.
And I believe there will be some surprises that you and I will deal with, because it is a critical part of the pilgrimage where politics will inevitably stray into every single move, and it'll be interesting to see how at the end this whole thing comes together, and what does it do to the region, and what does it do to us Christians and to believers of other faiths.
Look forward to speaking to you then. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you.